This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
We need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace. Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
I'm Jonna Marie Macias, and I'm from thewookiegunner.com and makingstarwars.net, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. On today's show, we will be discussing the premiere movie of the series, Spark of Rebellion, which introduces us to the crew of the Ghost. We have two esteemed guests joining us for Rebels Reactions, Jonna Marie Macias and Craig Dickinson. Jonna Marie is the creator of The Wookiee Gunner, an amazing and insightful Star Wars blog. She is also a content contributor for makingstarwars.net and a co-host on Now This Is Podcasting. She has contributed to StarWars.com and is a strong voice in the fan community. Welcome, Jonna.
Hi, thanks for having me, guys.
You bet, you bet. We also have Coffee with Kenobi's Rebels reviewer, Craig Dickinson, joining us. Craig's reviews, entitled Rebels Reconnaissance, are featured after every episode premieres on Disney XD, and his analysis will have you looking at each adventure in bold new ways. Craig can also be found on Star Wars in the Classroom and has been featured on our show, as well as Star Wars Kids Cast and Full of Sith. We're happy to have a cup of coffee with these two and to finally talk about this exciting new direction for the Star Wars saga. Welcome.
It's awesome to be here, guys. Yeah, awesome.
Yes, well, Jonna and Craig, it's great to have you on. Craig, return guest. Jonna, we wanted to have you on for a while, and this is the perfect episode. We finally get to talk about Rebels, which has been, we've been waiting and waiting for this for, it seems like, so long. And now I'm sure you probably have the same problem that Corey and I do. When is the next one going to air? Because they're tremendous.
Yeah.
So let's just get right down to it. And Jonna, we'll start with you. What is your overall impression of the first episode? Did it live up to the hype for you?
It did. I went to see it first at an advanced screening in here in New York City, and I was just blown away. I was grinning from ear to ear, and when I saw it, I just couldn't take my eyes off of the screen, even though I wanted to like nudge the people beside me and say, oh my God, we're watching it. This is it. It's finally here. But yeah, the show definitely lived up to my expectations. It's everything that I hoped it would be and more. It touched on everything, especially those A New Hope sentiments and feelings that they were trying to get at. And I'm glad that it didn't fall short, because it's so hard to live up to that. And they really set the bar high. I mean, especially coming from the Clone Wars, where that show, for me, it changed my life. And it's one of my favorite things ever from the Star Wars galaxy, from the universe. And just to, be on par with that show, at least in my opinion, it's amazing. And I'm glad that we finally have it in our grasp, and we're going to get it on a weekly basis now.
I do have to ask, though, before we move on to everyone else, do you think seeing it the way that you did perhaps influenced how you first digested this? Or do you think it was just a happy coincidence?
I want to say that I would have reacted the same way if I were watching it for the first time on my couch, like I did this past Friday. Except I wouldn't have had all those awesome fans next to me, so I would have been cheering on with my mom beside me. but I think I would have reacted the same way. I would have been online on Twitter, tweeting with everyone, and just enjoying this awesome experience with everyone.
Well, excellent. I can't imagine what that must have been like. We're all very envious, but happy for you at the same time, because that's awesome. That's awesome. You got to meet a lot of great people, and we'll certainly ask you about that a little bit later. But Craig, what about you? What were your overall opinions of this first episode, and how did it meet the hype for you?
I loved it. I was really excited by it. And just to speak to the way that you view it, I watched it for the first time on iPad. So, and even that small little screen huddled over it was an amazing experience. So it absolutely grabbed me from the first minute. The sound effects, the music cues, I loved the way it looked. Just all the callbacks, you know, things that I've spent so much time focusing on when I use that in my teaching. And then to see those come up again, I'm listening for leitmotifs and different, you know, elements of the hero's journey and these things, and it's hitting all these beats. You know, I've heard it said it's like a greatest hits is kind of what they had in that first premiere episode. It's very much like we're making sure we're touching all of these very important touchstones of Star Wars, just to kind of reconnect us with that. And just, it felt like Star Wars.
Corey, what about you?
Well, certainly it was an event for me. I know you and I planned to watch it debut on the night of the premiere. We had our kids with us. It was a great, it was a popcorn, some drinks, and it definitely was a lot of fun to enjoy it with, you know, obviously a co-host and somebody that you can, you know, really feel fandom for along with your kids. And like you guys said, I mean, the hype, it did live up to the hype. I mean, we've been sitting here talking about it for months and months now. And, you know, watching all the little clips and watching all the previews and the 7-minute preview that came out, it just seemed like it just kind of came full circle. Like, okay, like you said, it was just like, let's do this. You know, I'm ready for this. And it was exciting to see it actually be on the screen and just be fleshed out. And you can see the connections between the characters. And it's just, you could just definitely see the work with so much passion into this, as a series and as a first episode. I'm excited to like you said, let's do episode 2 and 3 and 4 and we'll keep on moving. So, yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've been, Corey and I have been chomping at the bit to talk about this finally. As you mentioned, we did something really cool. Corey came over and he brought his three boys and I had my two older boys. And so we watched it together. And the ages, I mean, I have a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old. And then, Corey, how old are your kids?
The oldest is 9, and then 7, and then 5. So quite the diverse.
A huge difference. And so at the end of tonight's Rebels Reactions, we're going to play the immediate reactions of all of the different boys after they watch this. And it's pretty fun because cool. They all take it in very different ways. And for me, I think it met my expectations. I was incredibly happy about this. I learned a long time ago that when there's this so much hype for something, you have to try to balance that. Yeah. And it was tricky to do with this. And I think it met my expectations. There's a part of me that wanted to exceed it. And it actually did when I watched it for the second time in preparing for this show. But we'll get into that. And let's just start off. And Corey, I'll just throw it back your way. Let's talk about the visual style of the show. I've heard a lot of people seem to not be able to help themselves and compare it to the Clone Wars or compare it to Pixar or compare it to other things, or, oh gosh, the Wookiees look weird, or, oh gosh, the Wookiees look cool. And what about you? You're the designer here. How did you feel about the visual style of the show?
Well, obviously we're coming off of Clone Wars and the incredible, you know, the season 6 that was offered through Netflix was just like the pinnacle of animation style. They really hit it really out of the park with that, and then just to come off of that and go into this series, it definitely has a different feel, and I think that's good. I think that's good to be able to make that separation, I think, as far as the visual style. I mean, obviously, this is a set in a different era in Star Wars fandom, Star Wars saga, so that, I mean, it's nice to be able to have a different style for us to watch, and things are a little bit dirtier, things are a little bit disoriented, and, you know, there's not so much sleekness to it, I think. But I think the overall animation style is well done for this new series. I think each character looks good. I mean, it's going to look a little bit different. It's almost like, you know, if you're reading a comic book and, you know, they change hands as far as artists or storytellers, it's kind of that same idea. Mm-hmm. You know, they're still keeping the head people and the head folks and the same ideas driving it forward. But, you know, you're looking at a new illustrator or a new artist doing, you know, Spider-Man or Batman or something like that. So it's still the same idea. It's still the same heart, if you will. But, you know, obviously just different style. So, yeah, I think it's all there.
When there was a close-ups of characters, particularly Kanan, how did you feel about the texture of his skin?
Yeah, I mean, when they got close, and they didn't get a whole lot of close early on. I did notice Zeb's giant yellow eyes really bounced out at me.
Striking.
Even all their eyes were very,
particularly Ezra.
Yeah, glowing and very. Everybody had their own kind of color eyes, and that would really jumped at you. And that was interesting because I guess I kind of remember that a little bit in Clone Wars, but I hate to be like, oh, it was kind of like Clone Wars, and just compare it to that all the time because it's not Clone Wars; it's something different. So, but yeah, it's getting up close like that, and you saw a little bit of detail and things like that. It was crisp and clean, and they had those quick sharp lines, especially for the hair and stuff like that. It was a lot different, I think, as far as just being a little plasticky looking. But I think that's okay. I think that I'm gonna be okay with that. I mean, it bothered me at first, but I think moving on, I'll get used to it and be okay with it.
And Jonah, what about you? I talked earlier about the whole notion of the Wookiees and the visual style. How did you incorporate the visual style into how you enjoyed this show?
Yeah, coming off of being a huge Clone Wars fan, you can't help but compare it. But at the same time, I'm kind of glad that they went with a different style because it's a different era. It's a different story. And it's great to see the creators challenge themselves that way. You know, you wouldn't want them to, just continue with something that they're used to and something that they've already mastered, because we saw the, sixth season and it was just beautiful, especially that Yoda arc was just breathtaking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to see that they're challenging themselves and adopting these new styles and learning from scratch over again. So it's not something where they're just going to sit back and, enjoy the show sort of a thing. They're just going to work hard at bringing us something different. And I really liked that. It's not one of those, here's the same old thing. So it was great to enjoy that new breath of fresh air, basically.
Yeah, I think it's similar, but very different. I agree. What about you, Craig?
Well, I kind of come to this from a slightly different perspective because I came to Clone Wars kind of late. It just didn't really work for my schedule. And so I've seen them all and I love them, but I wasn't really invested in it for the whole length of time that it was on. And so it's probably a little bit easier transition for me to just, it's Star Wars. And so it looks a little different, but I'm not so invested in that style, if that makes sense.
It does.
So yeah, I get where they're coming from. I totally love the fact that they're challenging themselves with creating new character models and things like that. And it just really seems like they're doing everything they can to go for kind of the widest audience that they can. And does, I mean, they've talked about like Tangled. That's one of the things that came up, that kind of movie and in that Disney style, to kind of maybe pull in that audience as well. And it just looks like they're kind of hitting it all over the place. And so, yeah, I liked the style personally. I thought it flowed nicely. Yeah, there's a little bit of a toyetic thing to it. It kind of looks like a toy, but that doesn't bother me either. I think the storytelling was so good, and I'm really interested to see how it's going to develop visually, because I like it already, but I know they're going to continue to evolve. So
I agree, and I actually love, especially since I'm a lifer. I mean, we're all lifers. But I grew up with the Kenner toys, and I love all the homages to the Kenner toys, even the little sound effects, the click of the cannon or the sound of the TIE fighter from the original Kenner vehicle. And I just think that is so great. I was on Assembly of Geeks talking about this, and I actually was talking about how much I'd love the design of the Wookiees. It looks weird, but I mean, Wookiees aren't real. Okay, I hate this.
What?
I hate this. Spoiler.
What?
Yeah, I
this
know, right?
Is completely new to me.
This is an outrage. So it just looks like those action figures. There's a lot of characters in the background. You've got the original Hammerhead in there with the same shirt. And I just thought, I love that. And speaking of loving and the particular characters, before we get more into the nitty-gritty of the story, and I'm so glad that Craig, you brought up the hero's journey, because when I was watching it, I was actually high-fiving you in my head because I was thinking about, Kanan and Ezra's journeys. But let's talk about our favorite characters in this first episode. The lead up to this, it was beautifully done, beautifully marketed, how they introduced us to these characters slowly but surely, and you became invested in them before you saw them partake in any adventures, which I thought was terrific. And after seeing this, my favorite character or characters ended up being a lot different than what I expected it would be when they first started releasing this. So, Craig, why don't we start with you? Who was your favorite character in this first episode?
You know, I'm not sure if I have a favorite character yet. I'm obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but I'm drawn to Kanan because he's the Jedi. And having read A New Dawn, I'm kind of invested in him and want to see where his character arc is going to go. But Ezra's fascinating. He's basically a blank slate as far as what we've seen so far. But you do see, like going back to the hero's journey thing, you do see the beginnings of that. And you just kind of wonder how far that's going to go. So I think those are kind of my two main ones. But I love Hera, and Zeb's fantastic. And even Sabine, I liked a whole lot more than I thought I would.
What about you, Corey?
You know,
I already know what he's going to say.
Yeah, we talked about this.
Like, arm wrestled over this.
We did. And it's weird because, like, yeah, you do want to, you know, cheer on Ezra. And I love all the characters overall. I think they did a great job in selecting the voices and the characters themselves and the mannerisms and things. But I don't know why, but Agent Kallus really jumped out at me. And like you said, that Ezra's a blank slate. I feel like Kallus is a little bit of a blank slate on his end because he's kind of something we haven't seen yet. I mean, and as far as a character in this era, I mean, doing his job, and I don't know, he seemed like he was just, I don't know, he was unique to me a little bit. So
tell me why you say we haven't seen anyone like him before, because I'm interested in that notion.
Well, he's part of that group of I can't think of it, the name of the group he's in.
The ISB.
Yes. So, I mean, it just seems like he's...
It's the chops.
Yeah.
It is.
That's what it is.
I'm totally growing that for
it is. I mean, it's so funny because, yeah, that's what I mean. The chops look really great. He's like the Star Wars Wolverine, if you will.
Yeah, a little bit of that.
And yeah, he's like a Star Wars Wolverine, but a spy. But you know, but he can still do the heavy lifting if he needs to be. He's the commanding. He does a lot of good, cool stuff, but.
Yeah, he's very intelligent, and his voice is so captivating. Yeah. David Oyelowo, he does a great job. The whole cast, as you had mentioned, Corey, that is just spot on. It's clear that Lucasfilm knows what they're doing and they're casting them. I'll just go with mine real quick first. Agent Kallus, I was going to say that, and he's probably going to be a close second for me for a lot of reasons. But I think my main character is Ezra, and I really thought he was going to be an afterthought. Or just something that wouldn't register for me right away. But he's everything that I thought he wasn't going to be. Mm-hmm. And I talked about this in my review of Ezra's Gamble, the Ryder Windham book that takes place right before this does, since we have the new canon. And he's charismatic, he's clever, he's skilled, he's passionate, and he's nuanced. He's not an annoying teen in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, those of us who, we all are around kids, and we work with kids, some of us do. He acted like a teenager, like a real flesh and blood teenager, and something about his eyes being a window to the soul, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later, but just the color of his eyes and the hope that he has in them, I just find him to be someone that we're really going to gravitate towards. And I think he's catching on in a way that Ahsoka did, but he's going to do it a little bit quicker than Ahsoka did. And that's certainly no knock against Ahsoka, because she's a wonderful character as well. So Jonah, to you, your favorite character this episode.
I'm torn between Sabine, because she's Mandalorian and I love Mandos. Mm-hmm. But I also have to come away with Ezra as well, because I just really loved, again, how you said that he's an actual teenager. He's what you would, you know, the kind of person you would talk to on the street. And I really loved, I think what won me over the most was the scene when he fell into the chair and he saw that he was in space.
That
and then
amazing.
he sees the TIE fighter and he's like, and I'm going to die. So it was, he just hit so many great humorous points throughout that entire episode. And I love a kid with great humor, and he definitely had that.
I agree that charisma is pulling through, and he managed to encapsulate verisimilitude, because you feel when he's in that cockpit and he sees the starfield and his eyes literally get huge, and it just hits you in a way like, wow, we're desensitized to this in a way because we've grown up with Star Wars. But for this guy, all of a sudden he's in space, and it's like, talk about taking a first step into a larger world. The metaphor there is beautiful. So I want to jump into something that I'm happy to say that I first started talking about on Full Sith, I don't know, a month or two ago, and now it seems to be talking all over the place, and it is, has absolutely zero to do with me bringing it up on Full of Sith, but everything to do with what's going on when you watch this, and that's the violence in this. And the main reason I bring this up, besides the fact that it needs to be talked about, is when you hear people talking about the Disneyfication of Star Wars and, oh, they're going to ruin Star Wars, it's very much the opposite. They have added some adrenaline into Lucas's franchise. And we see these heavy adult themes in a TV show that's labeled for ages 7 and up, right? So we're watching this. I'm watching this with Corey's kids who are younger. And I heard on the Wolfpack podcast that 33 stormtroopers are killed in this episode. I didn't count, but I believe them. They're good guys. They know what they're talking about. Yeah. We see racism with the Lothal Rat and the way they treat one another. There's a lot of heavy themes there. So this whole Disneyfication thing is a myth, which it's always been. But it's the violence that I think is something that needs to be discussed and probably will be discussed quite a bit. And probably for me, the heaviest is the fact that these stormtroopers are not clone troopers. They're flesh and blood. Whether they were forced into service or they volunteered or what have you, there's real cost here. There's real loss of life. And in many ways, it's done very cavalierly. So, Corey, how do you respond to that notion?
Yeah, it's definitely something that struck me with the Clone Wars, I think, of even the beginnings of those first seasons was the body count of just...
Those
are droids, right. So then, yeah, then of course clones, they move on to clones and we get to know some of the clones and realize that they're beings, you know, human beings with thoughts and feelings as well, not just soldiers. And then, yeah, like you said, the stormtroopers, it's a totally different era. And, you know, it's just, they obviously don't show the blood and things like that. And it's very soft. It's very soft violence, I think, as far as,
Not the end,
which gets me every time I see that. The stormtroopers themselves, I think, yeah, like I said, they're obviously they're a bully force. They do, you know, haggle that shopkeeper at the beginning there, and they're talking down to him, obviously, and arresting him, taking him off for no reason. And it's just kind of that's how they're portrayed, I think, too. It's they're trying to establish the Empire's fist in the galaxy here, and they're doing a good job of it. They're coming on strong, but that's the way it is.
No question. I mean, it's called Wars, Star
right.
Wars.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're watching it. You're a parent. You know, you're watching this with your kids. Were you concerned about this cavalier? Not necessarily cavalier, but this immediate loss of life.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's easier because they have masks on, and you can try to pretend like they're robots in your brain.
Maybe, but I don't think of their. I mean, I don't see them as just of dying a death. You know, maybe they're knocked out, or maybe, you know.
Cannon shoots them all right through the chest.
Yeah, but there's no blaster marks.
And they there's explosions.
There's explosions.
And they don't move.
Yeah.
And
they're also wearing helmets.
They're definitely
and armor
dead.
Too.
They definitely have blaster marks on them. You saw the red. You know, like the not red. The black holes after he shot them.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You're right. And I guess the explosions. I mean, nobody wants to be next to an explosion like that. So obviously people are getting hurt. So no. Yeah. I'm desensitized to the fact that it's a cartoon and all cartoons can bend and their arm breaks and they're good to go. And, you know, it's just maybe it is me. And I you bring a good point up, you know, as far as like my kids watching it and things like that. And
did they ask you about it at all?
No, nobody. Nobody said anything. I mean, I think even they're desensitized to it, I think, as well. I mean, obviously, anything with kind of that Disney logo is kind of like thumbs up, good to go, kids. You know, it's like it comes with that. So it's interesting because now it makes one to look back at it and really not make necessarily count the stormtroopers, but just see how it's just represented, I think, in a different light. So you guys make some good points.
Now, Dan, I think you hit on something about the helmets. You know, the fact that they're anonymous, I think, makes it easier for us to be desensitized. And the fact that we've seen stormtroopers forever just being slaughtered,
right.
We just don't think about it, you know. And if we get to the point where we see them without their helmets being killed, I think that would change things. But they're kind of anonymous. They're kind of almost robotic in a way.
Yeah, and I think I find it becoming a bit trite. It's become the easy punchline that they're bad shots Are they inept? Are they bungling? I mean, they must have some sort of thing to them that makes them want to be effective, because the Emperor is powerful, clearly, but he can't take over the entire galaxy by himself. He needs soldiers. He needs troopers. Mm-hmm. So they must be doing something right. And if they are that good of shots, then this show's over in 5 minutes. Yeah. You know, and R2-D2 gets blasted on the blockade runner at the beginning of A New Hope. So there has to be... They have to have some sort of value in some way, shape, or form. I sound like a stormtrooper apologist, and I'm actually not. But it's just something that I think that there needs to be dialogue about. Jonah, how does the violence – and you were there. You saw the live audience and everyone's rabid Star Wars fans. Did that come up at all, or have you heard much about this?
I do remember the little screening room I was in. They burst out laughing when Kallus kicked that stormtrooper to his nice. Sad death. And
it is funny, but it's also disturbing.
It is. It's very I laughed as well, but I kind of went, oh no, afterwards.
See, yeah.
But I had to ask my mom that question, like, what if I were 6 years old or 5 years old, would you still let me watch this show? And she said, you know, for you, it was never really an issue because I always guided you through it. So even though I didn't have questions or I didn't, was put off by anything that I saw, she, you know, took me to the side and said, you do understand that, you know, this is a war, that these are two different sides, that if one didn't protect the other, and so on and so forth. So I always grew up with that sort of, you know, voice behind my, at the back of my mind, and letting me know that these were the differences. So, and if you do that with your kids, I'm sure, you know, they will also understand those differences. So even though it's Y7, it's still recommended that you yourself as a parent or as a guardian or as a teacher, and, you know, you look at these differences and you let them know, and you help them through it as well.
Right. It's a perfect opportunity to have a conversation.
Yes, definitely.
And Craig, exactly. did your kids watch this episode?
They haven't seen it yet. And that's been, it's interesting that you guys are talking about that, because my son is six and my daughter's four. And I would probably let them watch it, but it's not definite. Mm-hmm. So I've been, I've watched it a couple of times, just, the last couple times specifically to screen for that. You know, what am I going to, how am I going to walk them through this? Is it too violent? And that's actually, it's the fact that it's actually a concern is, it's kind of weird to be on a Disney cartoon. But,
right. And it's part of the, it's there. And it's just part of the conversation. It's something that I think deserves a lot of analysis, and I think it's fascinating, and hopefully if the stars align, we ever have Dave Filoni on, we're going to ask him that particular question. So let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about Hera. Hera is someone, clearly Vanessa Marshall, one of the ultimate fan favorites in Star Wars fandom of all time. She brings Hera to life. She's a strong, amazing character that we love. How did she hit you all for this episode? Because actually some things happened with her that I didn't respect. And let's just throw it out there right now. Yes, she refers to Kanan as love.
Yes.
This is true. Now, if you listen to her interview she did with the Force Cast and Jedi News and Ion Kanan, what she said was, yes, I called Kanan love, but much in the way that a British person would say that to a friend or a brother or a sister, it wasn't a romantic love. And Vanessa Marshall actually says, she's too busy with her mission. That's really her main focus. Not to say there isn't chemistry there, but that is her main focus. How did Hera hit all of you? And Jonah, we'll start with you. I know you're a big fan of Hera.
I am. I love Hera. She's very wonderful and such a positive image for especially the fangirl community. Mm-hmm. And in terms of that, and personally, I'm a big Hera and Kanan shipper. But that's me being a fangirl.
I'm sure. I don't know if you heard me ranting and raving about, please don't make this into Twilight or not.
Oh, no, no. And I wouldn't want it to be that way. No. And you definitely, if you've read the Star Wars A New Dawn book, you even get that message from her in that, 6 years ago before Rebels started. She has this goal in mind and she does not want anything else to interfere with that. Sure, there might be chemistry or there might be something there in terms that they care for each other, but not really, that's not really her focus at that moment. And I completely agree. That's how it should be. I don't want it to turn into some odd.
Will they, won't they?
Yes, exactly. So,
yeah, please don't.
There's definitely. You know, now I want it to.
It's bigger than that. There's more. I mean, obviously.
Oh, yeah, exactly. There's definitely more to it. There's a bigger picture.
Yes. And again, as I said on our recent show of Coffee with Kenobi, I'm not against relationships. My wife's hot. Give me a break. but you got to keep in mind what the focus is here and what the audiences are. And I'm sure you all saw the ratings. It seemed like overwhelmingly over 80% of the audience was male. So I guess that's probably going to be something that they factor into the whole thing as well. But should they? And in conversely with that, I'm just going to keep piling the hair out there. She is someone that I've always thought was probably going to be my favorite character. And she's strong and she's the silent leader. She's the soul of that ship. Okay, then why is she always staying behind with the ship? I understand that she's the best pilot. That's a granted. That's a given. Why isn't she going out on adventures with these guys? That was problematic for me.
She's the Walsh of Firefly from Firefly.
But is that even necessary? Don't they have like a security system? Can someone else stay behind?
Yeah, but they got to get out quick when they're running like special ops and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's part of the plan.
Did any of you notice that though? Why is she staying behind with the ship all the time?
I did notice that.
Yeah,
I think it's because she feels comfortable knowing that she's the one who can get them out of a sticky situation, using what she loves most, which is the ship. I think. So that's how I see it. And maybe, who knows? Maybe we just don't know of any adventures so far that where she is on the ground, sort of a thing. And I'm hoping we get to see. Actually, we did. We saw that little clip of Sabine and Hera looking for that, whatever it was.
And the next episode shows it as well, which we'll get to that on our next Rebels Reactions. But I think it's something that we'll probably develop, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot to it. But just in this particular one where we're first introduced to her, is again something that you can't help but be aware of. And there is something to be said, too, for the fact that she's in control. She's driving the ship, and they all have to count on her, which is cool. And I also realize that when she gets Ezra to go back into the Star Destroyer, it's not because she can't or won't. It's part of Ezra's test. They're trying to see what he's made of.
Yes. It's part of his hero's journey, Dan.
That's right. That's right. He refuses the call and everything.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? And A New Dawn, I think, is almost required reading.
Yes.
Before, or at least in addition to this show, because then you
that
get
and Huck
to
Finn,
see,
they're both good.
That's good too. Yeah. I like A Tale of Two Cities also. Uh-huh. But seeing how she really is the one in this group who was the organizer. She was the first rebel that we've seen. You know, she's the one that Kanan joined her. It wasn't the other way around. And so it really makes sense knowing that she has that leadership role, that she's kind of the driving force behind everything that they're doing to disrupt what the Empire is doing.
I like that. I agree too. I think A New Dawn is required reading. I read it obviously before we saw this episode, and it really helped me get into her character. And like you said, it's nice to see the progression. And it's very, I was kind of like I was with Dan with where I was thinking, oh, she'd be a really cool character. I'm excited to see what she can do. And just having that John Jackson Miller's book just as a preamble to get into the character of Kanan and Hera, just to see where things are going to lead up to. I like the really fact that you said that she was the first rebel. I think that's a really cool way to put it. And she definitely drives the team, in their motives and obviously in their feelings and thoughts. And she's really a really nice driving force. So she's really powerful in that respect.
She is. And speaking of powerful and A New Dawn, let's just talk about Kanan and the big Jedi reveal. This is something. It's another reason why I'm reminded that I don't like spoilers, small or big. I'm expecting Jason to jump in here anytime and say, hey, because he's awesome. And that's one of his gifts. But on Coffee with Kenobi, we're going to talk about how it's revealed that Kanan is the Jedi. And for me personally, when I watched that scene live, I thought, wow, this is powerful. This is amazing. This is goosebump inducing. I wish I didn't know it was coming. That's neither here nor there. Mm. But I did think it was awesome. Let's talk about that moment. I was sort of hoping that the first moment with the lightsaber was going to be before Ezra discovered it, but it turns out it was the other way around, where he rises up on the ghost. How did you guys enjoy that particular scene?
I personally loved it. And like you said, it was goosebump inducing. I personally, maybe that's one of my, the things that I wish there was more at stake. I mean, even though that, you know, yeah, they were trying to save the Wookiees, and he, there was this, you know, huge unit of stormtroopers. I wish there was more involved with him moving around, maybe making it more. But then that's a testament to his skill level. It's, you know, he survived Order 66, so he didn't have that proper training. So on one hand, I can see why there wasn't a big, you know, show or flair. But on the other, I wish there was.
Well, are you saying kind of that the particular peril they were in, while it was arduous, it wasn't something that seemed to necessitate pulling out the lightsaber for the first time in a thousand years? Because as we saw in A New Dawn, and we keep referring to this because it's such a great book. So if you haven't read it yet, you'd certainly need to do so. But he has such a hard time acknowledging that he's a Jedi. And granted, a lot has happened between A New Dawn and Spark of Rebellion that I hope we'll get to find out about sometime in the near future. But he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that was reluctant. And then, you know, there are 7 or 8 stormtroopers, which he could probably run away from when he pulls out the lightsaber. So I agree with you.
I also know, Dan, that you and I talked about this just live during the show, a commercial break, mm-hmm. I think it was, where they made a kind of a group play, if you will.
22.
Was it play 22 or something like that?
I think so.
Yeah, and we were debating. Yeah, we had debated that. Look, was that the Jedi reveal play, or was it the hide in the crate play? You know what I'm saying? It was like,
right.
It was.
Yeah. I wondered that too.
It was kind of interesting. I was like, well, that's the last trick they have their sleeve. They're going to pull it out now. I mean, I did feel like it was a little forced. Yeah.
But I also think that might be because...
No pun intended.
Yeah. Very good. But I also think that might also be because I think they've revealed their cards a little bit more rapidly than they normally would because of Ezra and the fact that he's force sensitive. I think that's a big part of it. And after watching this episode for the second time, I completely agree with you, Corey, that was in fact... That's why they all looked at him like, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's the secret. And one of the classic lines in all of Star Wars, Clone Wars films, whatever, is when he said, I'm about to reveal a really big secret. That's not verbatim, but I thought that was very powerful. Craig, what about you? How about this scene?
Yeah, I loved that line. That was amazing. And, you know, it again speaks to the power of John Williams' theme. So you hear that Force theme come up slowly. And then just when everybody just stops and watches, even knowing what's going to happen, because you've seen all that in the trailer. You've seen Agent Kallus say, focus your fire. And he pauses, you know, on the Jedi. But even knowing that's going to happen, I still got chills.
Yeah,
because of the way that it was shot, the wide shot, and just the fact that everybody had stopped, like, this is a really big deal. There's a Jedi over there, and I watched that scene. That's the scene I probably watched more than any, because I just wanted to just keep capturing that. So I probably watched that scene a dozen times, just kept rewinding and watching it again. I thought it was amazing. And yeah, it's a little, the 22 pickup thing was a little bit, I was confused about what that plan was. Was this my Jedi reveal code? I don't know what that was exactly. I could go back and forth on that.
Did you think that was a legitimate reason for him to pull out the lightsaber?
You know, again, we're going to keep going back to
Star Wars is full of anticlimactic moments.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just be honest. Sometimes it is.
Yeah, you go back to A New Dawn again, and he almost uses the lightsaber. And doesn't. And it seemed like that situation would have been a more appropriate time to do it. And of course, they don't want to, they're building toward Rebels, right? Rebels will be the big reveal of these characters. We'll finally see them evolve into who they're going to be. Mm-hmm. But that seemed like a more, you know what I'm talking about with Vidian and that confrontation.
Certainly.
That seemed to, I was like, oh, he's going to do it here in the book. And I was getting really excited. And then he didn't. I'm like, okay, I understand, because we're kind of holding that off and we're going to have that later. But yeah, I mean, if you start,
maybe really that's the problem. Down. That was such a great reveal, and a book you can do so much more in a book.
True.
I mean, hey, Corey's written books, so he knows what he's talking about with this. But yeah, I agree with you. It's a new dawn. That darn John Jackson Miller made things so awesome. Yeah. And I do want to, before everyone freaks out, I do acknowledge that when I say things are a lot of anticlimactic moments in Star Wars, there are, but that's highly debated too. Some people have a hard time with how Anakin turns to Vader in Revenge of the Sith. I never really have. I can appreciate it, and I love it. But I think this, again, up for debate. And it sounds like I didn't like the episode, but I did. I loved it. But part of the things that I love about it is being able to analyze it and look at it through a critical lens. And so awesome that we have UT Juan joining us, because it's just a really, really fun thing to talk about. Let's talk again a little bit more about Ezra and Kanan, and how does this episode reflect A New Hope? Because they very poignantly have Obi-Wan Kenobi say there will be a new hope, and you see Kanan and you see Ezra. How does that change the term A New Hope for you, or does it at all? Corey, let's start with you.
Yeah, it definitely reflected. Obviously, it has the echoes of building to something. And I even like thought about this too. I mean, obviously they're gonna play with that time period and you know, leaping back to that. And I hope that they do it in the right sense, where they keep Luke's his destiny, you know, at where it's at. I hope they don't cheapen that, you know, and I don't think they will, but it's just a fine line, I think, even for fans to be like, oh no, you know, Ezra's going to steal the spotlight, if you will. You know, it's just, I don't think he's going to do that. I think it's going to be kind of a different way. And I hope they play it up to the fact that, you know, the relationship that Obi-Wan Kenobi had with Anakin, and that relationship, you know, the brothers' relationship. And I think that'd be really a nice way to do it with Ezra and Kanan. So I think going into A New Hope, we know that's all coming and moving that way. I think it's going to be a nice little shimmer of looking at that and saying, you know, here's where we're headed, and really just impact us even more now that we, you know, those series maybe ends, we go watch A New Hope and just have much more gratitude towards it too. I mean, I think they're just going to display
just
everything.
Just a little spark.
Yeah, spark, if you will. Yeah.
Craig, what about you? How does this change A New Hope, or does it at all?
I don't think it really changes it, but I do think that Corey brought up something interesting, that's the one thing that I have a little bit of hesitancy toward, is how does this work in with Luke being A New Hope? And if you have other Jedi that are showing, are they destined to die before the events of A New Hope? You know, it's much like we had with Ahsoka in the Clone Wars. Like, she's clearly not going to show up in episode 3. So, you know, dead Padawan walking, that kind of thing. So, at this point I've been able to kind of compartmentalize and just, I'm just going to enjoy this corner of the universe. And that's kind of the way that I think I've heard it phrased, is there's other stories going on during this time. That, you know, Luke is roughly Ezra's age too, and that's interesting in and of itself. But
now that's
just
true.
To be able to kind of enjoy the journey of the crew of the Ghost, and it's in the same universe. Clearly, it's happening at the same time as things are happening on Tatooine with Kenobi and whatnot. But they may not intersect. Apparently, they don't. So it's kind of almost its own story, even though it does exist in the same canon.
Now, this is 5 years before New Hope, or six?
Five years.
I think it's five, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. So by that rationale, then he's probably a year older than Luke, I guess. Because Luke is, I believe they said 18 in A New Hope.
Yeah, it's right around there. So they're about the same age.
They probably saw each other in the schoolyard. Yeah, I think so. For me, the whole New Hope thing is perfectly captured in the opening shot, when Ezra's looking up at this beautiful blue sky, and then darkness covers it with the wonderful V shape of the Star Destroyer. And then every time you see his eyes, they all glow to a certain degree. You mentioned Zeb's earlier, but I feel like his are so blue and so full of hope and optimism and life. He's a new hope for these rebels and the spark of rebellion that is being fermented through what's going to happen in this series. So I love that. I don't think it impacts in any single way, shape, or form that Luke is a new hope, and I don't think anyone would dispute that. But perhaps whatever happens here through some sort of series of events, whether they're serendipitous or not, impact what happens on Tatooine. I don't know. That's going to be part of the journey that we're going to get to take with him. But there's certainly a lot of hope here with Ezra and maybe Kanan. I don't think we could say that Ezra is the new hope for Kanan, because it seems like his relationship with Hera is that. And we saw that in A New Dawn as well. But I think that it's just really cool that they're actually re-looking at this. Jonah, what about you? A new hope.
I really love the way you said that he's the like a new hope for the rebels. And that's exactly what I was thinking, but I just couldn't find the way to say it. So I'm glad you went first and explained that, because that's exactly how I felt about it. And it doesn't really change what Luke is to me and how he's, you know, portrayed in the fourth movie. So I just think that it's this push for something new, and Ezra, definitely, I'm interested to see more of his abilities, what he's capable of. But like I said, the A New Hope role definitely falls on Luke, and I don't think Ezra will overshadow that.
No, definitely not. So we've talked a little bit about some themes, some stuff with the characters, particularly exciting moments. Let's talk about, let's just get it out of the way. If we're going to really critically look at this, we need to examine all the different layers and angles. But what about this particular episode did not hold up as well for each of you? And Jonah, we'll start with you.
Oh gosh. I'm such a positive person, and I'm always looking at the positive things that I never really.
Well, critical is not negative.
No. And like, I can't think of a, let's get to the next person.
All right. We'll come back to you. All right, Craig, what about you?
Well, you know, I'll jump on a couple of things. I think that, again, the stormtroopers really not being that much of a threat, especially on repeated viewings. But at the same token, that really makes Agent Kallus so much, very much interesting, that he is an actual legitimate foe for these people. You know, he's going to be there week to week, and he will be somebody they actually have to deal with. He's not a bumbling idiot. He's not even, you know, the Snidely Whiplash that General Grievous was in Clone Wars. He seems like he's somebody you really got to reckon with.
And he can't twitch his mustache because he doesn't have one.
No, he's just got the sweet sideburns.
That's right.
But, you know, and this is not really a gripe, but more just I was surprised that, and I guess happily so in hindsight, that we only saw the Inquisitor at the very end and just in hologram form. It was like, we have to wait again.
Yeah.
But just knowing that he's out there, I thought was very cool. But I was like, oh, he's not even in this. I got to wait. That stinks.
Corey, what about you? Yeah, Jonah's still over there twiddling her thumbs.
I am.
That's okay. Yeah, Craig, you bring up a good idea of the Inquisitor. And my kids, it's so funny. We were driving home, and that was their complaint too. They're like, oh, we didn't get to see the Extinguisher. I'm like, no, it's not the Extinguisher. It's the Inquisitor.
Speaking of Parks, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah, I think we talked about the big Jedi reveal. I really wish they kind of would have hung on that a little bit more. I mean, they really played that really strong, but you know, obviously they got to bring out some of the big guns a little bit just to get people wrapped up. I wish they would have held off on, you know, something like that, you know, to really, really jump things for fans. But yeah, I can't complain too much. I mean, so I guess one complaint I do have is Zeb. And he just sit there and was threatening Ezra the entire time. And like, not in a good way. He was like kind of
threatening a 14-year-old child.
Yeah, he was going to put this kid under. And I mean, I was like, okay, this guy's got to come up for air once in a while. Then he pushes him back and as they're leaving, and he gets caught, and then he feels bad, and he's like, okay, he's a remorseful character, we get it, you know. And then we see him, you know, push him onto the ship in the later scene, obviously, you know, coming to grips of, you know, I shouldn't have done that, I made a mistake. But he doesn't really, I mean, he doesn't really come forward too much, and I wonder if that's just his character. I think that makes him interesting, too, though. I mean, it's like, oh, okay, this guy's got some things to learn, he's got some growth, you know, and of course, obviously, Ezra brings that out in a lot of the characters.
He's sad that he gets kidnapped, and then they say, we got to go back for him. He's like, no, let's not do that.
Yeah.
But then he's obviously glad that he doesn't. Like you said, he pushes him on the ship. Yeah. So yeah, that's a bit of a thing to raise your eyebrow.
I like that part though, especially just to seeing how, when they're reunited and he's still trying to kind of teasing kid Ezra, you see the look on Ezra's face. He's like, dude, I'm not putting up with that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not funny to him. Like, it's kind of the, you know, the big brother, I'm just going to kind of punch you in the arm because we're friends and buddies and stuff. And Ezra's like, no, we're not friends.
Yeah. I'm going to punch you in the head.
Yeah.
And he does.
Is
there anything creepier than those cadet stormtrooper helmets?
Yeah, look like skulls a little bit.
Like, if you woke up and that thing was next to your bed, would you not freak out?
Weren't those the ATDP? The ATDP
similar yeah. design, but not those had some green in them, I think.
Ah, okay.
So, Jonah, do you want to go yet, or do you want me to?
Oh yeah, I will say that I wish there was a bit more Sabine, since I mentioned earlier that she's going to be my favorite character.
She's cool. She's every single character is very cool.
Awesome.
And I just wish that we would have seen a bit more of her. I mean, she did have that nice touching scene with Ezra, and then we saw Ezra, you know, develop that sort of crush on her. So I hope we get to see a bit more of her, because we didn't see much of it of her at all in this first episode. And I could understand that, because they're focusing on these other, you know, Ezra and Kanan and Hera and whatnot. So yeah, so I just want to see a bit more Sabine and her awesomeness.
Fair enough. I think if I have things that that didn't hold up as well for me, we talked about the Jedi reveal, and I talked about how I would have liked to have seen the way he reacts when Ezra gets the lightsaber for the first time. Upon my second viewing, I enjoyed that sequence a lot more, because Kanan did seem annoyed and a little bit threatened, but he also was performing a leap of faith. He was trusting in the Force, you know, hoping that Kanan would be basically someone to help him take on that mantle of mentor for a Jedi, for a potential Jedi. So I didn't mind that as much. The violence is something that is a concern for me. And I thought that the beginning, even though there was a big action sequence, I feel like their chemistry, once Ezra gets on the ship, then I'm all on board, and they just instantly click. And you do feel that family dynamic that is there. So I really enjoyed that part as well. Other than that, the only thing that I really had a bit of a gripe with was the fact that we've been hearing for so long, is it going to be in Lothal the whole time? And then Ezra pronounces Lothal in a different way, and maybe that's sort of like a Jersey, Joysy kind of a thing. But it seems like for a ship that's flying in and out of one planet, that's supposed to only stay in one planet, they go a lot of different places, and the Empire can't figure out that this is the same ship because they scramble a code. I found that to be lacking in verisimilitude a little bit. So maybe that's just something where you have to suspend your disbelief and remember that it's space fantasy. But that's something that kind of struck me.
Maybe if we could just see like a whole bunch more diamond-shaped Carillion ships just floating through the Lothal atmosphere every now and again. Like, oh, it's just one of those.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, if it's unique, that does make it kind of rough. Like, they do have eyes.
Yes, exactly. And if Agent Kallus is on the case, he's clearly not Inspector Clouseau.
Yeah.
So he's someone that you pretty much believe. And again, maybe this is more like stormtroopers don't have a good aim. There has to be some sort of suspension of disbelief there so that you can enjoy the story and the storytelling and the myth making that's taking place throughout this awesome, awesome show with so much potential and so much promise. So
hey, can we talk real fast about Chopper? We haven't brought him up yet. I want to say one more thing too about the kind of the quirks, I guess. Their hyperdrive worked every time. I think it feels like it's just like, come on, really? I mean, can we have a little bit of like, you know, tension
it's
of
newer.
Like, yeah, I guess so.
I'm sort of glad
you brought that up, because some people, I've heard very mixed reviews, I'm sure you all have, about the musical cues and the little homages to the original trilogy and just Star Wars in general. Personally, I'll just go first on this one. I didn't feel like it was pandering in any way, shape, or form. I thought a lot of season one of the Clone Wars did a little too much meta winking to the audience about what was going on. I thought the musical cues in here worked. I thought they were powerful and poignant. And we don't have any of the original characters or any characters that we know from anywhere in Star Wars except for a very brief hologram of Obi-Wan Kenobi. So I think that it kind of added to the atmosphere and the mood of everything. And I love the little nods and winks to everything else, especially to the action figures and stuff like that. It just kind of shows you that this is one big universe. There are a lot of separate pockets, more than we've ever seen before. But it just adds to the depth and the warmth of this universe that we love so much. So I liked all that.
Oh, and to go along with what you said about Obi-Wan, I wish we hadn't seen that in the trailers either. I wish that would have been another surprise.
Cool.
Especially because James Arnold Taylor versus him again.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that would have been a super awesome surprise upon seeing that.
He could have been a little older, too, I think. He looked a little young.
Yeah, well, the beard was pretty...
clean-shaven?
Yeah, that was pretty intense. Did any of you think that there's too much of that was it pandering or was it just nice references?
Yeah, it was a lot of nice little winks. Even the Wilhelm scream was in there.
That was great.
Yes.
That was great.
But I mean, it's fun. It's like they dipped into, you know, the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy a lot of times, but not too much where I was like, oh, come on, get over it. But I mean, I felt like you guys, we said in the beginning, like this is Star Wars, and you get that little chill in your bones and you get excited about it. You're like, all right, let's do this because we're fans. And I think that's even, they just would have thrown a bunch of stuff in there. We still would have loved it. I think it just, they did a good job. And I think that just having that stuff in there was just playing up to the saga itself.
Yeah. I just think that's how Star Wars works. You have reoccurring themes that you should hear during certain things. You should hear the Force theme when a Jedi is using the Force. There, you know, you don't hear Luke's theme, which you shouldn't because he's not in there.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found was really interesting was you heard Leia's theme at the end. Did you guys catch that?
Oh,
really?
I did not.
When they're on the ghost at the end, when they reunite the Wookiee child and the parent, they play Leia's theme, which I thought was really interesting. And it's obviously it's a romantic theme in the sense, like, romantic period. So it has that very kind of sweeping emotional feel to it. And I guess that's what Kevin kind of was trying to get to or to reach.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and that's the beauty of it, is that it's subconscious on some way, on a lot of levels, that you hear these themes, but you don't overthink them necessarily unless you're looking for them or watching it so many times, you're looking for a new thing every time.
Right. Or
on
a Star Wars podcast.
Or on a Star Wars podcast, or having to teach that to students.
That's right.
Mark that down on your paper.
It's a double whammy. That's right. Very good. So let's just go real quickly. We're starting to run short on time here. So let's just real quickly, since we are educators, 50% of us. No, that's not true. John, you're in education too. You're one of the rogues.
I'm
a librarian. Yes, access services librarian. Yeah,
that's
and
awesome.
I also teach digital storytelling sessions so that way students know how to create their movies and for their projects and such.
That's awesome.
And Corey has done some speaking in schools too. So 100% of us, pedagogy all the way. So let's get an overall grade for this episode. And I sort of cheated, and I was so excited after I watched this, so I texted Craig and Corey and tried to get their grades. But I'm interested to see if after all this time if it's changed. So, Jonah, we're going to have you start off. What's your grade for this episode?
I will give it A+.
Wow. All right.
It was that awesome for me that I just had to give it that grade.
That's awesome. What about you, Craig?
I'm still gonna go with A-. I think that it was amazing. There's just a few things that I would have liked to see a little bit more. Like, I wanted to see the Inquisitor, and maybe that's just a personal thing. I mean, the Sabine not being in it that much, it's hard with as small as it is in an hour of television, you just can't get everybody in. But
right.
I thought it was a fantastic start, and I think it's going to be a great show.
Corey?
Yeah, you texted me and I gave it away, but I said a B-, but now I'm kind of bumping it to B+ because...
I was surprised that you said that.
Well, it's only because I feel like we've seen these character clips and, you know, him and Kaiji Kao saying aim of the Jedi a million times, and like to see it on the screen, I was like, oh, it was really cool. But like, I feel like it's like, I don't know, it's kind of been in our atmosphere a little bit too long for us to just, you know, sit down and see something brand fresh new for this first episode. I mean, it really, really slammed it home with the advertising and, you know, obviously people talking about it, and obviously being on a podcast, we obviously debate it and talk about it. So it's, I mean, it's, It's difficult to grade it too, I think, but I think I give it a big B plus because it's there's so much there it can build on, and like we said, it's only an hour long, so there's so much character development that we're looking forward to, and I mean it's a lot of fun. So it lived up to the hype, I think, but just for personal reasons, I think it was just a little bit under.
Yeah, I really do think that now we talked about this a little bit more. I really think that all of the trailers, while I love them and I just could not get enough of them, I think that took away just a little tiny bit of the magic. Well, now while I was watching them, more upon reflection, then I watched it again, and my grade hasn't necessarily changed, but it's a little bit higher. I'm going to give it a B plus, which is still really, really strong and really, really good. And I loved it. I went and I know that it's on DVD, but it's not on Blu-ray, and I wanted to have the best quality, so I downloaded it on iTunes just because this is something I'm going to watch a whole lot, and there's going to be little things I'm going to notice, and it'll be so much fun to go back and watch it, you know, years down the road after we know some of the places these characters are going to go. So there's just so much promise, so much potential, and how wonderful that we have new chapters in the Star Wars universe with these characters. I mean, you got to think about the fact that Star Wars is a well-established brand with beloved characters that are household names. Even if you have never seen a Star Wars movie, you know some of these characters. So you bring brand new ones in, which is a bit of a risk, and they hit a grand slam. So that is just so exciting. So exciting. So before we let you all go, why don't we get any last-minute thoughts or things that any of you wanted to talk about that we didn't get a chance to? We could probably talk about this for hours and hours, but there's only so much bandwidth out there. So, Craig, let's get your any last-minute thoughts or reflections you have on Spark of Rebellion.
Oh, you're going to make me go first. Okay.
You're our leader.
Okay. The last thing that I really want to talk about, I just one of my favorite moments from this episode was when Sabine took her helmet off, and just to watch Ezra's face and watch his whole attitude change.
That was the only thing I thought was cheesy in that whole.
Oh, I thought that was amazing.
Of course.
And so I was like, hey, how's it going? And then a little bit later on, she has the line that interplay a little bit, and she says, well, we can't let him go. And he looks up at her hopefully, and she's like, the kid knows too much. And you see his face just sink. Like, he called me a kid.
Yeah.
And the reason is that I just happen to have some information. So I just, that reminded me a lot of the beginning of Attack of the Clones and, you know, Anakin being all nervous and then getting shut down immediately and just seeing that. And so I think that those two are going to be really entertaining together, potentially. As you know, it's not going to be Twilight, Dan.
Thank goodness.
No, Twilight.
No, it already is. It's already but good, so it won't be Twilight.
Exactly. It's starting from, you know, a much better place. But getting to see that, I mean, that's one of the things, again, with, you know, those classic hero's journeys, is that you have the hero and the goddess above his station that he's kind of trying to reach to, mm-hmm. and can't quite get there. And so I liked that trope being thrown in there too.
Well said, my friend. That's why you started this one. That's good. I love
Thank
it.
You. Thank you.
All right, Corey, what about you?
Yeah, I think, you know, we all rated it pretty well, and I'm just excited to be, it's here. I'm ready to watch the series, and it's a great blast off episode. I mean, they show every, you know, character. We get introduced to a nice rounded group of characters. I was just excited for each character themselves. There's not one character I'm like, oh, I'm not really that cool, you know, excited about. But I think every character has potential. Even the stormtroopers themselves, just, and even like the imperial officers, just see where everything goes. I'm just really excited to you know, play in this era of Star Wars and just see how everything connects, and just, I think they really started off with a bang as far as storytelling and character development. I mean, and it can only get better from here, so I'm looking forward to everything else.
Jonah, what about you? Any last-minute thoughts or reflections on this one?
I really hope they continue the awesome humor that they established in this first episode. It's just so great, and it's not overdone, but it's just on point, and it brought out so many great laughs, and I hope to continue laughing on a weekly basis.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about it. That's why this is one of the reasons why people were so excited. We haven't even addressed Kinberg's writing, but he had the arduous task, the challenging task of bringing these new characters to life and I think it was delightful. The humor is such an important part of taking these really, really heavy topics, this tyranny, this oppression, genocide, which we'll see a little bit more in the second episode, especially. So it's just needed. And it was very well done. Sometimes when you try to make something funny, it can be challenging because many actors have said comedy is the hardest thing out there. So it makes it funny. And there's also that adventure, that sense of wonder. I've heard a lot of people saying that when they watch this, it reminds them when they first saw New Hope. I'm not going to go that far because I think that's its own thing. That's like that started all of this. It's going to be hard to replace that for me. But it does bring that sense of joy, that sense of magic that Star Wars brings to us that binds us as fans together, much like the Force, you know, binds everything else together. So I thought it was so much fun. And perhaps the best thing I can say about it is that when I'm watching these episodes, I truly don't want them to end. And I love Clone Wars. Clone Wars and Batman the Animated Series are my two favorite animated shows of all time. But when I'm watching this, I desperately want to spend more time with these characters. It's almost like I'm walking through the Star Wars desert and Rebels is the Gatorade that kind of quenches that because they're just so endearing and engaging, and you just want to see what makes them tick and what kind of adventures they're going to get into. And it's just a stunning show. So it's still a B+ for me, but that only means that just imagine what's going to happen later. So it has been such a joy and such a pleasure to share a cup of coffee with this very first episode, Spark of Rebellion and Rebels Reactions, with Jonah and Craig. You two were just awesome. You've been such great supporters of our show and in the Coffee with Kenobi family. And we can't thank you enough for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely.
And where can listeners find it and chat with you both online and things of that nature? Jonah, why don't we start with you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter with my username at BlueJayGuys. And you can also hear me on my new podcast called Rebels Chat, which I do with my mom.
Awesome.
Cool. Which is very cool. And Craig, what about you?
On Twitter, I'm at InfluxMan. And of course, you can find me on CoffeeWithKenobi.com doing the Rebels Reconnaissance. And I'm on StarWarsInTheClassroom.com.
That's right. And you can also find information about Craig on StarWars.com.
That's true. You can search for me and I'll show up.
Isn't that the best?
That's the craziest thing.
That's the
same
best.
Here.
I know. I do it more than I'm comfortable sharing on the air.
Oh, Dan, I'm starting to catch up now.
Oh, man, that's so funny. I love it. Well, thank you again, guys, so much for being on Coffee with Kenobi. And Jonah, before you leave, we do have to ask you our five questions.
Oh, great.
Yes, very much. Craig, you want to stick around for that?
Sure, I'll listen.
All right, man. All right, Corey, why don't you start?
Sure. All right, Jonah, your favorite Star Wars movie?
Favorite Star Wars movie, I'm going to go with Attack of the Clones, mainly because it's, you know, the one that introduces the clone troopers. I'm a big clone trooper fan, and I just love that scene in Kamino with Obi-Wan and Jango Fett.
I think you're the first person to ever say Attack of the Clones. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, I think you are.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that's very awesome. Yeah, I guess we'll have to send you our special no prize.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, Jonah, who is your favorite character?
Favorite character, I would go with Ahsoka Tano. I know she's not part of the movie saga.
She's canon.
She is canon, yeah, and I absolutely adore her. She's done so many great things for the Star Wars community, and you know, and her voice actor Ashley Eckstein has done amazing things as well. So I just absolutely love her, and I want to be her, and I want her to be my best friend.
All right, your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
Line of dialogue, I will say. Oh man, when Luke says, but I had to go pick up my power converter.
Really?
That is my favorite line. And every time I watch the movie, I always have to say it in a little whiny voice with it. I just adore that line.
That's fantastic. Let's see. I lost my thing here. Okay. If you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
I am starting to collect. I'm getting now into the groove of it because there's so many awesome people who are in the community who do that. And I just want to tag along and do my own little collection. The only cool thing I own right now, which I recently got because I hunted it down in 7 different Walgreens, is the White Armor Boba Fett.
Oh, nice. And that's the only cool thing that you own. Well, hopefully when we put this show on, we'll play some violin music in the background.
I know. It's so sad. No, but I also have a cool bag that Vanessa Marshall gave me. And cool. It's not a really collectible. It's just a regular bag that I can carry around with me. But I love that in terms of a Star Wars item.
And Vanessa Marshall actually personally gave that to you?
She not personally, no. She sent it to me.
That's fantastic.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah. We're fangirl flailing buddies on Twitter.
That's right. Yeah, that's always so fun.
I'm looking forward to actually meeting her on New York Comic Con this weekend.
Oh, that's going to be
so
cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. What particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
Particular themes, I would have to go with the fact that there's this, the Force is this thing that you really can't, it's just this powerful thing that you really can't grasp. I mean, there are ways to grasp it, obviously, by using the Force and whatnot, but just that all-knowing, not really able to, I can't put it into words, but that the mythology of it all, I think, is what really resonates with me, because it's something that I like to tell my own stories, and as a storyteller, it's great to have that sort of mythology just affect people in a way that Star Wars has for the past 30, 40 years now. So I think that's my favorite aspect of Star Wars and a sort of theme that resonates with me the most. I hope that made sense.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah, I love it. Jonah and Craig, we're certainly going to be doing these as long as the good folks at Disney and Lucasfilm put them out, so we would love to have you on again. And Craig, you're a legacy now, my friend. You're our official Rebels reviewer. Make sure everyone checks out Rebels Reconnaissance after each and every episode, and make sure you go to the Wookiee Gunner and check out Jonah's awesome podcast and everything she writes about on the Wookiee Gunner. And we will certainly have links up to all these things on our show notes. Thank you again, Jonah and Craig, and have a great evening.
Have a great night.
Thanks, guys.
Good night.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coryc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi as well as keep up to date on our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torok on iTunes.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.